Welcome, beautiful souls, to the Soul Ascension Show. It brings me such pleasure and joy to have with us David Windlebury, an amazing Vision Quest guide who was my guide in my Vision Quest for the last year. And David is a prominent guide in the UK. He trained at the School of Lost Borders in California under the guidance of Stephen Foster and Meredith Little, pioneers who first brought the Vision Quest into the Western culture. And David has over 20 years of experience into the Vision Quest process. So David, thank you for coming on to the Soul Ascension Show. Welcome.
My pleasure.
David, there's been a lot of questions since I started talking about the quest a few shows back, and I've shared a little bit on the community page on Facebook. There's been some people asking about the process, what it involves. I had a look at the definition of Vision Quest, and this might make you laugh. It says, an attempt to achieve a vision of a future guardian spirit traditionally undertaken at puberty of boys of the plains of India, typically through fasting or self-torture. And that made me laugh because the quest is often involves a little bit of self-torture. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah, it does involve a degree of self-torture, but mildly so.
In your eyes, what do you define as a vision quest?
A vision quest is a rite of passage, a ceremony that will shift you from one stage of your life to the next. So if you're going through major change, whether that's being made redundant, or getting a divorce, or getting married, change of career, any major life change can be celebrated and eased through doing a rite of passage. And the Vision Quest is just one rite of passage. There are many. Traditional cultures all over the world have used rites of passage to help them shift from one life stage to another, and this is just one of them.
Do you feel that they're quite popular in the UK? Do you feel people are seeking this kind of work?
Well, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I wouldn't say it was popular. It's more a case of if you hear about the Vision Quest and it strikes something in you, then it's not going to leave you until you do it.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't happen to many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can say just through my own experience, it's definitely an acquired taste that that meets you in your path exactly when you need it. And I remember 4 weeks before the quest actually started, it just came to me that I should do it, and I didn't even know what it was about. But I remember looking for a tantra course, would you believe? I don't think I've ever told you this. I was looking for a tantra course because I thought that's what I needed, the type of healing that I needed, and found myself actually on your website through a tantra practitioner that you work with, and then discovered that also one of your trainees, I guess, is Jane Gold, a friend of mine. So it just all felt divine that I should do a vision quest, and that was only 4 weeks before going into the process. And for those who don't know much about vision quest, that 4 weeks was a very intense period of severance. What is severance? What is that for people who are wanting to do a vision quest?
Well, the vision quest is in three different stages. The first stage being severance, where you sever from your past life. You kind of die to it to be born into your next life, your new life. The second phase is threshold, where you go out into the forest or up onto a mountain and you fast for 4 days and nights. And the third phase is integration, where you go back into your life and you have to reintegrate with all the changes that you're about to make in your life. So the severance phase is usually the scariest part, because you're not really too sure what you're letting yourself in for.
I remember it so fondly, and you guided to journal. And looking back on my journal, everything came up to stop me. You know, fears, tiny little fears, became snowballed into these dreadful, just terrors. I would have terrors about doing Vision Quest. But I remember when I first met you, you called this intellectual masturbation.
Oh dear.
I'm sure everybody has went through that process where the ego just gets in the way and tries to stop you because it knows that this will take you through your limits into that limitless realm where your spirit can truly guide.
And it's freaking out.
Yeah, it freaks out. What was your first...
anything to try and stop you from doing it. You know, when you make a decision to do a vision quest, it's a big thing. It really is a big thing. And in that moment, you really mean it. This is something you really need to do. So you make the decision, you pick up the phone, you get in touch with me, and start the ball rolling. But as you get closer to the date where you have to go off and do the vision quest, it's like 9% of you wants to do the vision quest and the rest of you just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it tries to put the brakes on in whatever way it can. I went through a phase of every time I did a vision quest, I'd injure myself before I went out. Like I'd slam my finger in a car door or drop a log on my toe. Anything that's going to stop me from going out to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The ego really kicks off because it's terrified. The one thing it hates is change. It likes to maintain the status quo. So it feels very threatened. But once you get over that, you're into a whole new thing altogether.
And yeah,
your
body
loves it.
Yeah, and it's you can really distinguish the three phases. I remember being in that threshold when we were at base camp and you were telling us all about what a vision quest involved and what we did for the 4 days. 4 nights when we're out in the wilderness, and at that point, I mean, I was really being in the moment, but I remember you said the integration, the year after the vision quest, that's actually the most terrifying.
The hardest.
But at that threshold point, I thought to myself, how can that be the hardest? That's the easy part. But I understand now, it takes that whole year of integration. It's completely transforming experience, which I really recommend to anybody who just feels, yes, this is the time for me. And I'm finding that, David, there's a lot of people who've got in contact that wants to do a vision quest. So you mentioned that there's three stages. What else does it involve when you go out in the threshold period?
Well, it involves fasting for 4 days and nights, being on your own, and being exposed. Being exposed by that, I mean you put your tent up at base camp, but when you go off to do your vision quest, you leave your tent behind. If we allow people to take tents, they tend to hide in them. So we'll let you have a tarp. So you can put a tarp up between trees. It'll keep the rain off. It'll keep you dry. But it doesn't cut you off from nature, whereas a tent does. So you're exposed. You're isolated. You're on your own for 4 days and nights. You don't meet or talk to anybody. And you're fasting. And when those three factors work together over a period of 4 days and nights, it moves you into a very altered state of consciousness. And that's the ceremony, where you awaken to nature around you. You communicate with nature, and nature communicates with you. You're in the zone, as to say. But it takes 4 days and nights to get there. People have asked me why it can't be 2 days and nights or 1 day and night. Well, the fast doesn't kick in until the second day anyway. So you don't actually enter that level of awareness until the third, maybe fourth day. Also, the psychology we use is based on the four directions. So we say that you do 1 day for each of the four directions. There's a lot to it, actually. It's not just 4 days and nights on your own in the forest. I mean, that's called camping. This is something a wee bit different.
And all the questers out there who have done it listening in will absolutely understand what David means. You mentioned the shields, the four directions. That's really important when we're doing a quest. Does that stem from, I take it, the traditional Native American ceremony?
I don't know where it stems from. I was taught the teachings of the shields by Stephen Foster. And he learnt it from a medicine man. Apparently, from what I gather, it comes from the Mayan Indians of Central America, but it's so old, nobody really knows where it comes from.
And I think it's one of the symbols, the circle with the cross in it, that a lot of people can relate to. And I remember when you were showing it, it just seemed to trigger a really deep ancient memory. And you talk about how the 4 days represent the 4 different directions. What are the directions for the days? You start in the west, is that right?
No, you start in the south.
There you go. Got it wrong.
Start in the south. So the first day is the day of the inner child. For you, it would be the little girl. For me, it would be the little boy. And it's the south. The second day, you move into the west. And that's the time of the adolescent, the day of the adolescent. And then on the third day, the north, you move into the place of the adult, which for you is the woman and for me is the man. And then as you move into the last segment, the east, you're working with your opposite polarity. The old person dies in the east and is reborn again. So mm-hmm. the east is the end and the beginning. That makes sense to you. This is very quickly. I'm trying to run through this.
Yes. Yeah, definitely a simplified version. I remember different days bring up different things because you are in those different aspects of yourself. And you guide us to do different practices and different experiences that can either connect us deeply with the earth or help us to clear fears or help to raise energy. And I also really enjoyed activating your peripheral vision. Are these techniques that you gleaned along the way through your own experience?
Yeah, it's a bit of mix and match, really. over X amount of years of working with this stuff, I've acquired a lot of different tools, and I pull on certain tools to do certain things. There are a multitude of different exercises, and there are certain exercises to promote and amplify each shield, and I use them as and when I need them with people. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, yeah, I have a tool bag that's got all kinds of techniques in it, and I use them as they're more appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I remember journaling down all the techniques, and I think I maybe only did about 2 of them, but they're so powerful you can take them away and do them throughout the year.
You mean the earth awareness exercises?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I originally learnt most of them through a medicine man called Sun Bear, who I was an apprentice to for about 8 years.
I'm really glad you mentioned Sun Bear. I know a lot of our listeners want to know a little bit more about your experiences with him.
How many hours have you got?
I guess, what inspired you to do your first vision quest, David? Because that will probably lead us in.
I was not inspired to do it at all, actually. I used to have a career. I used to be a film editor. So my time was basically working and indulging in all kinds of activity. And then one day I get a phone call from a friend of mine, and he said that there was a Native American medicine man giving a talk at his Buddhist center, and did I want to go? My initial feeling was no, it didn't really interest me. But I went anyway. And I met Sun Bear, and he talked about the prophecies of his people. He talked about pipe ceremonies and sweat lodges. And then he started to talk about vision quests. As soon as he mentioned vision quests, my stomach went into a knot and I started to gag. And it made me feel intensely uncomfortable. So to cut a long story short, I went up to him and told him, and he laughed. And he said, "You have to do one, kid." So I said, okay. So I took a month off of work and I flew out to Washington State. And it seemed a bit mad traveling 8,000 miles to do a 4-day-and-night vision quest. Then I discovered that they were doing a course before the vision quest called the Apprentice Screening Program, which was 10 days. So I booked up to do that as well. The Apprentice Screening Program was probably the most intense 10 days of my life. It was completely mad. They were getting us up at 6 in the morning and working us through till 10 every night. So we were emotional yo-yos, 1 minute crying and the next minute laughing and not really knowing why. But the 10 days kind of really opened us up. And then we had a couple of weeks rest, and then they put us up on the mountain to do our vision quest. And I tell you, when I did that first vision quest, I really hadn't a clue what I was doing. And I was so out of my safety net, it was unbelievable. I mean, they have things like coyotes and rattlesnakes and scorpions and tarantulas and bears and wolves and all these things that, you know, a film editor is not used to whatsoever. So my first night was a major panic, But there again, the landscape was just extraordinary. And the weather was brilliant, and you just slide into it. You know, just slide into a realm that you didn't even know was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes the most awesome experience you could ever have. Vision Quest moved me so far from my everyday self. You know, I didn't know that was possible.
When you get smudged in, when you start that first day, you really feel like you're stepping into the spirit world. You're absolutely in that other realm. And I remember you said to us before we left, you might get so used to the land that you just don't want to come back. And by day three, I had set up my own little home in this, I don't know how many square meters of earth in the Cairngorms here in Scotland. But I just wanted to stay. It envelops you. Mother Earth just takes you in and goes, actually, you can stay here if you want to. And it's very alluring.
Yes. That's women that have that. Men come back really quickly. It's a really interesting dynamic. With men, I have to really push them to go out. But after 4 days and nights, they all come back as eco-warriors and want to change the world. Whereas with women, it's totally the opposite. They go out really easily. It's trying to get them to come back, which is difficult. They realize that is the real world. This is the nightmare. They don't want to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember just making friends with slugs and frogs and butterflies. And you have this communication. You know, a lot of our listeners are very close to the elementals, and you know, they have that communication. But I can tell you, from working with the earth alongside her for many years, I was scraping the surface. I mean, you have such a deeper appreciation for who she is, and as you say, you take her on, don't you? You become one with her, and it's an ongoing process. I definitely feel I've got more vision quests to do, and I know that you've done several now, haven't you?
I've done about 18, I think.
18. Wow.
Yeah, I was a little bit obsessive.
And do you feel you're done in your process?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
you're never done with your process.
Mm-hmm.
And there are always reasons to do it. It's just that I get a little more tired now. One vision quest usually picks up from where the last one left off. So it's an ongoing journey, really. And each vision quest is basically the next step on your journey.
I'm sure all 18 of them have been extremely profound and transforming. What was your most, in this moment that's come into you, what was your most profound quest for you?
Probably the first one. They all have their moments. But my first vision quest was truly staggering. And I really kind of blundered through it with welly boots on most of the time because I had no idea what I was doing. But you don't really need to. You just need to follow your senses. The first vision quest I did, when I got out there on the first day, I really didn't know what to do. We had very little preparation. But it was such a nice sunny day. I just sat down and looked at my environment, the little place I was given to do my vision quest in. And it was full of pine cones. So I busied myself making pine cone castles, then knocking them down and making pine cone spirals. And knocking that lot down. And then I decided to make a big pine cone circle, which I did. And by the time I finished it, I sat down and looked at it. And then to my amazement, I noticed that there was a huge branch right in the middle of the circle that for some reason I hadn't noticed before. So I thought, that's odd. What's that doing there? So I walked up to the branch, and on this branch is a praying mantis, which I've never seen before, apart from in the zoo or, you know, or on TV, but in real life, it's sitting on this branch, and it's shedding its skin. It's half in and half out of its skin.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, that looks a bit strange. So I sat down and watched it for hours, and it never moved. But the sun moved. So after a certain amount of time, it was in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over, and I picked up the branch, and I moved across and put it back down into the sunlight. And sat down again. And then the mirror opened for me.
Mm-hmm.
What I was doing, what I was experiencing, what I was seeing with that praying mantis was a reflection of everything that was going on with me. I was there praying. I was shedding my skin. I was putting myself in the light. And I learnt the powerful medicine of the mantis is to be still.
I love that. It's so true. I think a lot of people think they're going to go on Vision Quest and all of a sudden Mother Gaia is going to be there and all these elementals are going to talk to them and they're going to have these incredible visions that they would perhaps have never done before. Yet it's the more subtle.
Yeah.
If you're aware, if you're open, you can see the most beautiful reflections of Mother Earth through the insects, through the birds. I had a lot of deer coming forward and they would just come up and there was no fear with them because I didn't have any fear with them and they were such beautiful creatures, had so much to share, but I don't really want to go into my journey too much. But yeah, the mirrors. One exercise you gave us was to observe just one square foot of the land and just look, and you said that within the first 5 minutes, the ego would come up, there would be resistance. But after you, if you just leaned into that and let it go, peace would come and you would start, the mirror would come. The earth would become a mirror and you would start to see what you needed to see. And it did. It completely opened up. Talking about that, actually, you did actually have an experience with Mother Gaia, didn't you? Talk about the subtle to the big.
The most amazing thing that happened on that first vision quest, I think it was around about the third, maybe the fourth day, I was just sitting on the ledge looking out across the landscape, and it was in the Cascade Mountains, which were absolutely stunning. And I'm just sitting there in the sun, and a huge dragonfly lands on my knee. So I look at it and say, oh, hello. And it said, hello. I said, how are you? And it said, I'm fine, thanks. How are you? I said, well, I'm a bit tired, actually, and quite hungry. And it said, that's okay, I've been watching you for days, but you're doing very well. So I'm having a conversation with a dragonfly. Now, at the time, there was nothing unusual about that at all. It seemed so totally natural. But then when you come off the mountain, and you're coming down off the mountain, you think, my God, I had a conversation with a dragonfly. And you think, hang on a minute, you know, people don't have conversations with dragonflies. You know, I must be going completely bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, you never forget it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You never forget the feeling of being in that state where that communication takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, I was sitting there looking across the valleys, and in the distance, I saw this tiny little speck going right across the sky. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a plane. And I watched it for ages, and it was just moving across the sky, and I thought, no, it can't be a plane. And then, you know, your fantasy kicks in, you start to fantasize about it, and I thought, ah, no, that's not a plane. That's an eagle. That's a golden eagle.
Mm.
And I'm going to call it. So I said, golden eagle, come and visit me. And the moment I said that, it stopped. And I thought, hang on a minute. I was just messing around here.
Yeah.
But it stopped, you know, it's not going across the sky anymore. And I thought, hang on, you know, it's obviously not a plane, it just doesn't stop there. And I watched it for ages before I realised that it hadn't stopped at all, it had just changed direction.
Mm.
And the moment I called it, it started to come towards me. And I think it took about 20 minutes, and it came straight towards me and went 8 feet above my head.
Wow.
And as it went over my head, it looked down, and it was a huge bald eagle, white head, black body. And as soon as it went over me, I just burst out into floods of tears.
Mm.
And there's huge connections take place when you're in that zone, that sacred space, the spirit world, if you like,
mm-hmm.
where all the things that separate you from nature have gone.
Definitely.
That's my cat meowing.
She's putting in her 2 cents worth. Yeah. You know, that took me right back. I really felt that because it took me right back to an experience. It was on day 3. And just to give a little brief picture for those listening. Day three, I had done most of my ceremonies, the Death Lodge, which we'll talk about, and I thought I'd done it all. I thought, no, I've done it all. I don't need to do anything. And I came back, and David and Jen basically just sent me back out. And they said, no, you're not done. And actually, for a long time, they didn't even see me. I returned to base camp, and they didn't even see me because I was in that spirit world. Anyway, I returned back to the land, got myself orientated again, and I remember sitting out on a rock, and I was writing poetry. I was really in the zone, just really one with the earth, and I have a deep love for deers, and I saw a deer on the first day, and I was just thinking to myself, and actually writing the words, I wish I saw a deer right now. And I got told, look up. And as I looked up, right in front of me, a deer came running over just in that split second, and I just knew it was Mother Earth. It was a gift from Mother Earth saying, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm watching you, just like you said, I'm watching you. And there's this beautiful synergy that happens between you and the Earth, and it obliges you. It obliges you, I feel, with anything, whatever your healing intentions are. It can support you, whether you need to be provoked, which I did, or whether you need to be held and really nurtured. Perhaps you're doing a quest for healing. I remember the Death Lodge ceremony, which I'd like to ask you about, David, having the elementals of that piece of land that I was in really rooting for me. And when I was calling out the people that I wanted to clear from my life, they were really behind me like a little tag team boxers, you know. They really just wanted to punch these people out of my life, and it was just amazing, the support that the earth can give you and all the little beings of the earth. What is a Death Lodge ceremony, David?
It's a ceremony of severance, and well, basically, imagine that you're about to die. You live in a little village in the middle of the forest. You're really old, and you get this feeling you're about to die. So you don't tell anybody, but you walk across the square and you enter the Death Lodge. So one person notices that you've gone into the Death Lodge, so then the whole community realizes you've entered, and they all line up outside the Death Lodge. So they go in to see you one at a time, so that you can tie up all the loose ends between each other, so that when you die, you leave free from all ties to the past. That's the basic idea. But when you're doing it on a vision quest, although it's a ceremony of severance, which means it can be done before the vision quest, I like to get people to do it on the first night, because the first night is usually the time when all your fear is going to come up about being in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're focused on doing a ceremony, all your fear comes up, and the ceremony channels the fear, and the fear will amplify the ceremony. And the idea is to make a stone circle, preferably to one side of your vision quest site, which you're going to call your Death Lodge. You make the circle during the day, and come night when it's really dark, you make your way to the Death Lodge, you sit inside it, and you say out loud to the darkness, I have now entered my Death Lodge. This is my last night on earth. Before I die, I call in all the spirits of my loved ones, my friends, my neighbors, my enemies, all the people I have unfinished business with, so we can make it good. And you sit and wait. And then maybe you'll get a sense that a spirit has come. Maybe you see that spirit. Maybe you'll just feel their presence. Usually it's the first ones to turn up are usually the people closer to you, like mum, dad, wife, partner, children. They come up to the edge of the circle. You say everything that you haven't said to them before, and you allow them to respond. Depending on their response, you invite them into the circle, or you can send them away. It's a matter of tying up all the loose ends between you and all the people in your life. It's particularly useful if you're somebody who has a lot of abuse in your past, because then you can call up the abuser to the edge of the circle. Mostly they don't want to come.
Mm-hmm.
But because you're in the place of power, they have to. So that you get them to the edge of your circle, and then you can say everything that you need to say, but you have to allow them to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they've responded, you can let them go. Sometimes they won't take back the pain they put you through, and you have to make them. And eventually they do. It's a very empowering process, because you're also calling back the power that they've taken from you. So the whole ceremony can be hugely empowering. And somebody told me it's like doing, you know, 4 years of intense psychotherapy in one night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really goes very, very deep.
And it's very physical. In my experience, I was literally... Yeah, you're in the dark. It's your first night on the quest. You've been fasting all day. There's no protection, which we would normally have in the world. You know, we unveil ourselves. We come face to face with what we need to either banish or bring, or accept and bring into our circle to be with us. And for me, I remember just retching, physically retching. And it took me, I think, did I do a death lodge? 3 nights I did a death lodge, because there was so... I went out there with a lot of baggage, a lot of karma. I remember you saying to us, all the things that you take out, like toilet roll, and I took out crystals, and I took out so much, and you said, Callista, that whatever you take out, all the baggage, all that equals your karmic baggage. And it's so true, because I took out everything. I think my rucksack was the size of me, if you remember.
Yeah.
And
I usually tell people that the weight of their rucksack is equivalent to the weight of the karma they're carrying.
Yeah.
You should see them shed gear really rapidly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, remember, there is a guy called Daniel who was doing the quest with us, mm-hmm. and he literally took out water
and nothing else.
I think he had a tarp, maybe. I think that was it. But going back to the Death Lord circle, I thought that was extremely empowering, because you could pick rocks and you could say, for example, this rock I charge with the energy of my husband or my child. And I remember charging one of my rocks to the energy of your bear and to Jen's owl, and had that medicine. I had the dragon energy, I had unicorn energy, I had earthly energy, and really laid into the people from my past. But on the third night of the Death Lodge, I called forward the energy of the darkness. Like, what was I so scared of? Everybody seems to have these fear of the dark, which represents the fear of their subconscious, perhaps the aspects that they haven't gave light to or understood yet. So I called forward those energies. Do you think a lot of people... What's your take on that? Do you think a lot of people do have this inherent primal fear of the dark?
Yeah, hugely. Years ago, I used to work with teenagers, taking them through vision quests. And they pretty much weren't scared of anything apart from the dark. So I used to use an exercise, which I still do use, as part of the preparation. I get people to go out and do a night walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's engaging with the darkness. I usually get people to do the night walk before they go out on their vision quest, because it shifts a lot of the fear. Now, a lot of these teenagers were absolutely terrified of doing the night walk. So we have this exercise where I take somebody, put them in the lane, and tell them, okay, I want you to walk all the way down the lane, up onto the moors, to these standing stones. It's about a 20-minute walk. And I want you to do it in the dark, without a torch. And of course, they all get absolutely terrified. But then the trick is to ask the darkness a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I get them to stand in the dark. I leave them alone. I walk away, and they stand there for about 5 minutes until they have a question. And then they ask the question to the darkness. And it can be anything. Like, this one guy, his question was, what do I need to get me through this? So he asked a question to the darkness, and then he starts walking. And along the lane, there's a part where all the trees come over, and it's absolutely black. And he got halfway down there, and then all of a sudden, he sees this man standing in front of him in a big cape. And he said, I was just on the verge of panic, and I was just about to run when I heard this voice in my left ear, and it said, continue. So I continued to walk, and I walked straight through this man. So what did he do? He walked straight through his own fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The image of the man was a projection of his own fear. He stepped through it.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he did that, everything changed. He then got another answer, which kicked up another question, and that another answer, then another question. And within minutes, this guy's in conversation with the darkness. So the darkness ceased to be his enemy and became his ally.
Mm-hmm.
And made him strong.
I think that's wonderful. And that's all you need to do. There's that quote from Marianne Williamson, but I think other people have said it before, that our greatest fear is not of the darkness, it's really of our potential. And I think the darkness, it's the unknown, isn't it? It is our subconscious, it's our potential. I wondered if you could tell the listeners, remember you were talking about a woman who came on your vision quest. I think she first did her night walk with you, and she was really skeptical about spirit, and she thought, you know, what is spirit all about? I don't believe in it. And was her intention not to... Maybe you can refresh my memory on that one.
Oh, my God. I'd given a talk. Many times people ask me, what demons am I going to meet out in the woods? Well, obviously you tell them that, you know, there are no demons in the woods. The only demons you're going to meet out there are the ones you're taking out there. Because there are no demons in the woods, but there are lots of nature spirits. So I started telling this group about encountering nature spirits on the land. And this one woman was looking kind of a bit suspicious and a bit credulous, and she said, oh yeah, well, I'm not too sure I believe in all that. So she was going to do her night walk, and I took her out into the lane, and I told her to relax and to tune into the darkness and to ask her question. And I said, what is your question? She told me her question. I thought, oh, okay. And then she realized it was a bit, you know, a bit mundane. Mm-hmm. So she said, I said, okay, I'll leave you here to find your own question. I went back to the cottage. 5 minutes later, she's banging on the door, freaking out. I've got to see David. I've got to see David. She's shaking like a leaf. And I said, so what happened? And she said, well, I couldn't think of another question. So I just came up with, well, David's been talking about all these spirits on the land. Well, spirits, if you really exist, show yourself. And as soon as she said that, she heard this grunting in the field. And she heard these feet running. And she thought, oh, my God, there are two animals in that field, and they're running towards the gate, and the gate is open. And she just stood in the middle of this lane, clutching her stick. And she could hear these animals running up the road behind her. And they got closer and closer and closer and shot straight past her, two hounds from the underworld. And they disappeared into the darkness. And completely freaked her out. And when she told me, I just said, what made you come up with such a dumb question? if you're going to ask them to show themselves in that zone, they're going to show themselves. And they did.
Oh, and I bet she was changed ever.
Absolutely, yeah. Terrified her in the moment. But you know what? She went off and did her night walk. It really didn't stop her.
It's so interesting, you know, because we've done talks about this on previous shows about, is there truly anything to fear? Is there demons? Is there evil and all that? And it truly is, I guess in my belief anyway, I think you're of the same ilk, that it's just what we're carrying. It's just what our subconscious can manifest. That's what we're scared of. That's what we'll meet. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I feel safer out in the woods doing a vision quest than I do walking around the streets of Stroud mm-hmm. at night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are spirits out there, and they all know why you're there. So when you think, I'm going off into the woods to spend 4 days and nights on my own, you're never alone.
Mm-hmm. And they, yeah.
The spirits are always there.
And they do. They help you at every point. I mentioned before that sometimes they can provoke you. And so when I did my vision quest with you last year, it was in the midst of Hurricane Bertha, if you remember. It's probably the worst time to go out on a vision quest. And never mind, you know, it was what it was. But we went out there, put the tarp up. Obviously wasn't allowed a tent, but I had this this red, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's if you get lost in the wilderness, you can put it around you and you'll be seen, something like that. Anyway, I put it up as a kind of like windbreak, so it was kind of like a makeshift tent that I had. And what happened, the elementals, I mean, it wasn't the wind, because the wind was moving in a way that wind does not move. It was the it was the elementals. They were ripping it off because they did not want me to have this barrier. They wanted me to be open. And, you know, folks, that really took me to my edge. But I'm so glad that they did that. And the next day I was more connected and more rooted and more anchored into the earth than I was ever before. So I think you go out there with an intention, don't you, David? But it might morph and change, and you'll receive something. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have a strong intent. If you go out there, well, the first time I did my vision quest, my first vision quest, I had no real idea what I was doing or what my intent was. And it took years to kind of put that vision quest together to make sense of it. So it's a good idea to have a sharp intent when you do the vision quest, but that intent might well change. You might have the intent of, oh, when I come back, I want to become a writer. I want to focus on writing. Is that the right thing for me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might or might not get an answer to that. But we've noticed over the years that you definitely get what you need.
Yeah, it's not what you want, it's what you need, isn't it? For sure.
And that is, and how does that work? Who knows what it is that you need?
I know.
I don't do that. I just, you know, keep you safe and, you know, prepare you as best I can, and then I hand you over to the spirit world.
Yeah.
And they are the ones that know exactly what you need.
But when you're back at base camp, you're holding space and you're tuning in, and we definitely felt you doing that. We felt that strong connection.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put your link to your website and everybody can see your picture, because you just have such a bear energy. This is big brother bear is just looking after you, and I really appreciate that. When you go out in your vision quest, you also receive your name, don't you? And you also perhaps a vision quest mantra or some sort of vibration that you can take back, and you can bring that into your community and into your life.
Mm.
Where does that stem from, the Native American tradition?
I believe so. It took me 3 or 4 vision quests to get my medicine name. Of course, when I first asked for my medicine name, I wanted something up there, something really fancy, like Rainbow Hawk or something. So when I did my first vision quest, I didn't get a medicine name. When I did my second vision quest, which was 4 days and nights of me wandering around in the middle of the desert, my medicine name came. But it wasn't one that I wanted, and I didn't really like it much, so I kind of shelved it. On the third vision quest, it came back again, but with a little story added to it.
Mm-hmm.
So over a period of about 6 vision quests, the name came and the story began to unfold. And I was told that my medicine name is the name I use to introduce myself to the spirit world.
Mm.
I don't use it in public. And in many times I've been in circles where people have said, it started introducing themselves by their medicine name, and it comes to me and I say, oh, I'm David. They say, well, don't you have a medicine name? I said, yeah, but it's not for this. It's not for this situation. It's for me introducing myself to the spirit world. And I don't tell people what it is unless they need to know. If they're doing a vision quest, then I'll tell them.
And I think there's a lot of integrity in that. The name, I'm certainly going to keep the name to myself. It doesn't feel, I don't feel I need to share that. But what I will say is, the name that I received, the other questers who were out, when we all came back to base camp after the 4 days, we had made each other gifts called giveaway. And Daniel, who I had a really strong connection with, his gift that he made was a complete mirror for my name, and it was just so beautiful. And he didn't know that, of course. He didn't know the name that Spirit gave me. So yeah, it's amazing how that works, actually.
Yeah.
David, we're kind of coming up to the end of the interview, but I wanted to speak about, you've worked with so many different tribes, you know, after you had your meeting with Sun Bear and you did your initiation, you worked with many different tribes. Could you share perhaps a nugget of wisdom that's helped you, that's best served you in your path, that maybe can help some of the listeners? how long have we got?
I seem to have been very reluctant in walking my path. It just unfolds. I mean, part of the apprenticeship of being an apprentice to Sun Bear was that he would farm you out to work with other people. But he would never tell you who they were or what they were like. So sometimes they would be absolutely fantastic. You know, he'd sent me off to work with Grandpa, this Paiute medicine man we knew. And I loved Grandpa, spent a lot of time with him and learnt a lot from him. And then Sun Bear would send me off to somebody else who I would find deeply scary and totally untrustworthy. So basically you're learning how to discriminate between what is real and what isn't, and what is good and what isn't. So that's pretty much the way Sun Bear taught us. You learn for yourself what feels good and what feels strong and where the power is. Of course, when I came back from America, I was so full of this stuff, I wanted to run Vision Quest. But they were very Native American because they were my teachers. And it didn't take long before I realized that, hang on, you know, we're not Native Americans and we don't live on that soil. So I revamped the Vision Quest. I took away most of the Native American stuff. So the focus for doing the Vision Quest was basically getting close to our land. And I tested it out. And I think it was about third or fourth group I ran. Oh, this is way back in the early 90s. I ran a Vision Quest group, and I gave them nothing that was Native American. I didn't give them the teachings of the shields. I didn't give them any of the ceremonies. I just let them go out and sit on the land. And when they came back and told their stories were loaded with Celtic imagery.
Wow.
Which is the land revealing these stories to people. So I reoriented the Vision Quest. So it's coming into connection to the power of our land, so that our land can actually teach and heal us.
I think that's amazing, because it definitely, I'm sitting here looking at a postcard of the Cairngorms, and that's where we were up in the Vision Quest. But you also share down near Wales, and the land, and those that are listening, there's a lot of earth shamanic practitioners and elemental lovers that listen to the show, and we can all appreciate that different aspects of, you know, wherever you are in the country has its own medicine, and when you're out there in the Vision Quest, it will reveal that. And you know, the Cairngorms for me are very wild, very elemental, lots of fairy energy. You know, the fairies try to lure you into their realms. I remember a beautiful mountain being that wanted me to come into his cave and basically do the quest in the cave, and I wasn't going to do that. And down in Wales, it seems to be quite raw, the energy down there. And you also did your quest in the desert. I mean, you must have had, you've obviously seen a very broad perspective of contrast.
Yeah, I think the nicest Vision Quest I did was in the desert, which was surprising, actually, when Meredith wrote back to me saying, oh, please come and visit us, and we'll show you our beautiful desert. And I thought, well, what's so beautiful about a desert? It's just a barren landscape. Wrong. It was magic in all kinds of different ways. And every place that I've done a Vision Quest, you connect to the power of that place. Wales was, harsh and a bit scary. The Cairngorms was, full on with the elementals. And the place I'm using now, I'm just beginning to get a feel of. It's very gentle land, but it's immensely powerful. I'm going to share this little experience that we had just the other month with Poonam. You know Poonam, of course.
Yes, yes.
We had one lady out in the woods doing her Vision Quest. And I think it was on the third night I grabbed Poonam and said that, you're going to do a night walk. And I want you to walk through these woods, down to the edge of the woods where this lady is, stop and ask the darkness Tell the darkness that you're here to support her, and is there anything that you can do to help her? So off she goes, without a torch, in the dark. She gets to the edge of this woodland where this woman is doing her vision quest. And instead of stopping there and asking, you know, saying what I asked her to say, she walked into the woods about 20 yards. And then she said out loud what I asked her to say, and then she got this feeling that she had to get down and put her head to the floor, which she did. And as she stood up, she saw this man standing in front of her, who she said was about 7 foot tall. And he looked at her and said, "You're not needed here. Go away. She's with us. We are looking after her now."
Oh.
So Poonam turned around and came straight back.
I love that.
Although she was ashen white and shaking like that, I just cracked up in hysterics. She met the guardian of the, you know, the spirit guardian of the forest.
Ah, oh, that's really beautiful. Do you think that was a dryad, a tree spirit?
Hmm. So when we say you step, when you step through the threshold circle, you're stepping into the spirit world. We mean that literally.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I can feel that some, you know, some viewers might be, you know, fearful of this, but truly, truly, there is nothing to fear. It is another world, literally, opens up to you. And I think a lot of, let's say, light workers, you know, healers, dabble in these energies, but you know, they work from their heart upwards. They don't like going into the deep dark. They don't, and they're only experiencing half of their life. There's so much that you can glean from the darker side, and you don't have to dissect your soul and your shadows. It's just making that connection, isn't it?
You just have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember this one time I was on the edge of an island, and I watched the sunrise. And it was really amazing. And then I thought, hey, you know, this happens every day.
Yeah.
You can see this beauty every day. But we're not there.
Yeah.
You know? We're doing other things. If you have it in you that you really want to work with the spirit world, you have to do a vision quest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most powerful way of engaging with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can sit in your living room doing shamanic journeying with a drum as long as you like, but it's not going to ever take you as deep as when you're held by the power of the land.
You know, there's something I want to share just before we close the interview, and it's just because I know there's certain people, I think, on the same path, and maybe you can reflect back on this, but when I first came to do the vision quest and I met you, and Jen knew a little bit about me through our Kundalini yoga background, and I was very much up in the sky. You know, I wasn't earthed. I was happily working with angels every day, working with that realm, almost to the point that I'd forgotten to be here, to be present.
Yeah.
And for me, what was challenging on the quest on those 4 days was to stay present, because I could easily feel the fairies, I could easily feel the dryads, I was witnessing so much different energies going on around me, but my challenge was to stay present and to stay physical and in my body. Do you think that happens a lot these days with people, because there's a lot of airy fairiness going on, isn't there?
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember some bear saying to me, he said, if you're going to become an apprentice and you're going to be working with medicine and spirit powers, you need to be extremely well grounded. You need to have at least 1 foot firmly planted on the floor. And of course you need to go through a couple of years of intense psychotherapy. Because if you don't work on your issues will work through the medicine, and the medicine will be corrupted by your issues. So you have to be very clear. Not only do you have to go through psychotherapy if you're going to be doing this work to clear your issues, you also have to be well grounded. And that means walking differently. And that's where we tell people when they're coming to do a vision quest that they have to walk differently, slowly.
Mm-hmm.
What we say is you walk in a sacred manner. By that, you have to sink your center of gravity from your head into your belly. And as you move, you just tap your belly and keep your attention there. You walk very differently. And Sun Bear told me once, it's Imagine you're walking and every footstep you take is a kiss on the face of Mother Earth.
I love that.
And you walk differently and you connect. But you have to be prepared to go into those dark places. You know, you can't just be hang out with the angels and be in the light all the time. That's not being in balance.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that was a big lesson for me. And I think a lot of people are headed that way, that they need a vision quest. And I really hope that they'll contact you, David. I'm going to put all your contact details, websites, and of course Jen's details because she's your go-to girl. And I'm sure there'll be more questions after this when we put this podcast out. So hopefully, maybe we'll do another show. We'll just wait and see. Okay, thank you, David, for sharing your wisdom and your stories. It's been really powerful, really beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.